around 40% of women are going to still have a diastasis at 6 months postpartum. And with most things, I expect that if it hasn't resolved in the first 3 to 6 months, it is much less likely to resolve on its own naturally.
Hi, I'm Sarah Kuhn. Welcome to the Juna Women Podcast, where I sit down for candid conversations with women who are experts in their field and share their specific knowledge so that we can become better equipped to handle all things motherhood. Juna Women is an extension of Juna, a fitness and nutrition app created to help guide you through your trying to conceive, pregnancy, and motherhood journey. Everything we do at Juna is designed to empower and support you through one of the most incredible and challenging times of your life. Today, I'm talking to Katie Hunter for round two of our Core Restore series. The last episode with Katie, we talked about C-section recovery, and today we're shifting gears to focus on diastasis recti, what it is, who is at risk, and what you can do if it happens to you. I hope you enjoy. Katie, here we are for round two. This whole episode is going to be about diastasis recti. So thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me again to discuss more of the core.
Yes, real quick, I'll let you reintro yourself because if someone didn't listen to our C-section episode, then they will not know who you are. So go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Katie Hunter. I am a pelvic floor physical therapist. I treat all pelvic floor related dysfunctions, males and females, but I do have a special interest in treating pregnancy and postpartum. And I own my own pelvic PT practice in Thousand Oaks, California, which is in Southern California, just outside of LA.
Awesome. All right. We touched on it a little bit in C-section, but let's wipe the slate clean and talk about what is diastasis recti, who's at risk for it, and what, like how it shows up in both like pregnancy and postpartum.
Yeah. So diastasis. I say diastasis. It is all the same thing.
I know, me too. It's so hard. I'm like, I used to say diastasis recti and then I heard people saying diastasis and I'm like, oh my God, I can't, I just however we say it, it's the same thing.
Yeah. It's the same thing. It's the same word. So diastasis recti is the separation of one of the abdominal muscles called the rectus abdominis. And it's really a stretching of the fascia that sits in between the muscle bellies, which is called the linea alba. So diastasis recti is completely normal. It's expected to happen, especially in pregnancy. It is, the linea alba is supposed to stretch to accommodate for a growing belly. So that even applies to people who are not pregnant. It's just most often seen in pregnancy and early postpartum. Research shows that 100% of women by 40 weeks pregnant is going to have diastasis. Mm-hmm. So then things don't immediately go back to normal immediately after delivery. So we can expect in the first week, 100% of women are going to have diastasis. And it's really something to look for and be concerned about in your later healing process. People who are at most risk for this are people who've had multiple pregnancies, multiple births, so like twins, mm-hmm. triplets, multiples. There is some correlation with older maternal age, which is technically over the age of 35, although that is starting to be discounted in the literature. So that one's up in the air. Having more weight gain during pregnancy, larger babies, or just purely by having a larger belly, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then one other thing is there is some correlation that people who do not exercise during pregnancy are more likely to have worse diastasis outcomes in postpartum.
Oh my gosh, that's so fascinating.
Yeah.
I did not know that. And it's also, it's so interesting because you hear like all of these don't do this to avoid or do this mm-hmm. or don't. And most of them don't do this and don't do this and don't do this because you're going to give yourself diastasis. And, mm-hmm. and that's good to hear that it's, I actually know several of my friends that had really bad cases of it mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. felt like they were like, I feel like I did it to myself. And I'm like,
don't think so. They were active.
Yeah, because they were active. And I'm like, I think it was the twins.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. No, and there is exercise and activity is a spectrum. So you will see really high level athletes who exercised all throughout pregnancy and do have worse diastasis outcomes. And I think that we will get into this in the conversation, but there are things to look for it to see, like, the exercise I'm doing is not helping me. But in general, being active and using your core in the appropriate way is going to lead to better outcomes.
Now we're talking like in postpartum, because there's, I think pregnancy is a whole different diastasis conversation. Like, obviously everyone has it, but they're a totally different conversation. What are the degrees of diastasis recti? And like, when would I be diagnosed with it? Because I think, and go through though, like, I think it's like at 6 weeks, like 60% of people still have a diastasis, and that doesn't mean that it won't. Do you have all those, that data?
Oh, I have the various measurements. Okay. I can quickly look at what I've collected over. I do. I have a whole list of just like data points. But yeah, I have that around 40% of women are going to still have a diastasis at 6 months postpartum. And with most things, I expect that if it hasn't resolved in the first 3 to 6 months, it is much less likely to resolve on its own naturally. So in the first 12 weeks, if you're seeing some signs of this, I would still take the tips that we talk about today on how to avoid making it worse. Yeah. But in the first 12 weeks, seeing this is expected. And it's really after the 12-week mark that you start to think, maybe I need to see a professional. But the varying degrees, the technical degrees of diastasis, it has to do with how far separated the two rectus bellies are. So how stretched out is the linea alba? And a mild case that's still considered dysfunctional is between 2 and 3 centimeters, which we use, like even in the clinic, I use my fingers as a measuring tool. I don't get out a little measuring tape.
Right.
Some people do. I just don't, because it's easier this way. But I use my fingers. So 2 fingers, depending on the size of your fingers, is about 2 centimeters. 2 to 3 centimeters is a mild case, but it's still enough to seek treatment or corrective exercises. 3 to 5 centimeters is considered moderate, and anything over 5 is considered severe. That's definitely when you want to seek professional treatment for it. But literature has gone up to as high as 20 centimeters.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's pretty big. I think the worst I've personally heard of was probably about 9 centimeters.
We're going to take a quick break so I can tell you about the Juna app, the app that makes this podcast possible. Juna is the premier app for every stage of motherhood, with a 12-week trying to conceive plan and workouts, key nutrition information for every week of pregnancy and postpartum, plus 6 full video courses on birth prep, breastfeeding, newborn care, infant sleep, sleep from 4 to 12 months, and starting solids. The app is designed to be your number one companion from trying to conceive through your baby's first year of life. It also includes daily diaphragmatic breathing exercises, pelvic floor prep, daily tips, and notes from me that are relevant to the exact things you are experiencing. These are so helpful for easing any fears and preventing the dreaded gestational Google mania, that sickness where you can't stop Googling every little thing that happens during pregnancy. Juna is available for both iOS and Android. Just search Juna in the App Store or go to juna.co. Again, that's juna.co. The app is completely free to try for 7 days, and if you decide it's not right for you, you can cancel anytime within the first week, no questions asked. Download Juna today and get started. Now, back to the show. Wow.
Yeah,
that's, I think it's hard to believe that that there wouldn't be like considerable dysfunction. Okay. I think there's a lot of women that are like, I think I have never heard of this term, but like something's going on here. What are some like signs that maybe I should consider? Do I have this?
Yeah. So if you listen to the C-section podcast, then, or the episode, you will have, this will be a little bit of a review. If you haven't, you can listen to that. But I would say the bulging abdomen, so the mommy pooch, is a sign potentially you have diastasis, but also just in movement and exercise, if you see that you're doing a specific core exercise, for example, a plank or even a sit-up, and as you're doing that exercise, if you look down and you're like, that's weird, my belly looks big. Why is it looking big? I'm doing core exercises. Or it's actually, I've got this, it's called coning, but like this true bulge that's coming out of my belly as I'm doing this specific core exercise. I don't think it's supposed to look like that. And it's not. Those are good signs that you may have it and that you may want to seek treatment. Other signs that are, I would say more or less the mommy pooch, the bulging belly, poor posture. Those are things you're going to notice in your everyday life, just looking at yourself in the mirror or looking at yourself while you're exercising. But more functional things that are a sign you may have it and want to seek treatment would be like back pain, pelvic pain, leaking, having a tight pelvic floor that can lead to things like painful sex, and then any other bladder or bowel related dysfunction.
And then let's say I have a diastasis, I'm 10 weeks postpartum. What are exercises that I should avoid until I get better function?
Mm-hmm. If you become familiar with what coning or doming or bulging of the abdomen looks like during exercise, so I recommend just doing a quick Google search or Instagram. Yeah,
we can add some links to our show notes too.
Perfect. Then you're looking for that during exercise. And if there's any exercise you do that you see coning or bulging, that can further separate the gap or the stretch on the linea alba. So those are things you want to avoid because it will actually just worsen what you currently are dealing with. In general, sit-ups and crunches can aggravate diastasis, and they aren't my favorite core exercise anyway. And then planks and inverted positions like a downward dog. So even going from like plank to pike or downward dog to a plank, if you're doing a yoga routine, that is a lot of pressure and stress on the abdominal wall. So those are movements you want to pay particular attention to, looking for coning and bulging. And then the last thing would be exercises where your legs are doing separate things. They're just harder on the core, like a lunge or single leg exercises, or even movements where your arms are far away from your body and maybe you're holding a weight. They're just harder on the core. So you want to be looking for coning. And then my advice is, if you see that coning, see if you can either modify the exercise or engage your core in a different way to reduce coning. And if it doesn't go away, that exercise is too hard for you. Or if you're like, there's no easier exercise, this is the lowest level possible exercise I can do, then you really want to seek treatment.
Yeah. Our most popular question is like, what exercises should I not do during pregnancy? Mm-hmm. That answer is just different for everybody. Like, everyone controls their intra-abdominal pressure differently. And so I was able to do a plank until I was like 7.5 months pregnant mm-hmm. with no coning. Mm-hmm. But like some people, that was my third pregnancy. With my first pregnancy, like month two, I was coning. So I was like, okay, I have different.
Yeah.
And so I think it's, everything is different. And so paying attention to how your body responds to an exercise, that goes for like anything, right?
Yeah, exactly. And and I agree. I think just giving a blanket statement of don't do this is not, doesn't work for everyone.
So what are good exercises that will help me close that gap?
So this would be exercises that put stress on the deep core muscles, particularly the transverse abdominis and the pelvic floor muscles. So I'm going to get into what that means.
Okay.
You'll see a lot where either trainers or PTs or like all the different specialties, exercise specialties, will say load the body. You need to get load and stress on the body. And that means add a weight, add a resistance band, or use body weighted resistance to teach your body how to distribute that load. And like you're saying, to distribute the intra-abdominal pressure to put stress on the deep core. I feel like I'm getting really scientific here, okay, good. And it's using those deep core muscles correctly that's important. So knowing how to do a Kegel correctly, which is a pelvic floor muscle contraction, and knowing how to do a transverse abdominis brace correctly, which is anytime you do an exercise class and they say like belly button to your spine or pull in your belly or any of those cues, that's what they're trying to get you to use, is your deep transverse abdominis and your pelvic floor. And going back to those things, what to look for if you're not doing it correctly. So what you should see when you engage your deep core is the belly draws in and becomes flat. If you're not doing that correctly, you're going to see coning or bulging, like you're pushing your belly out instead of pulling it in. So those are the exercises that you want to focus on, is getting the transverse abdominis and the pelvic floor to work correctly, and then adding a load or a weight to your exercise while using that muscle correctly to teach your body how to distribute pressure appropriately. I hope that wasn't too confusing.
No, it's helpful. I think, you know, for people listening, if you have diastasis, we do have a 6-week core restore program that kind of goes through this and starts you from the very basic exercises that Katie helped develop with me. And so if you're like, oh, this is me and I want to work on this at home first, then definitely give that a try, because it will help you on the what to do, what exercises to do. Now, my last question, you touched on it a little bit, but what are the functional and aesthetic risks of living with diastasis recti? Like, why should I get this fixed? Why should I focus on fixing this?
Oh, yeah. I think that's a great question. So having diastasis, having these signs of diastasis are ultimately a sign that your core is not working the way that it's supposed to work. And the function of the core is to stabilize the back, to the joints of the back, to stabilize the joints of the pelvis, and to protect the abdominal organs and pelvic organs. So risks of living with it are that you could develop lower back pain, pelvic pain, you could experience leaking, you could have pelvic pain associated with a tight pelvic floor, like I mentioned, pain during sex, and any related bladder and bowel dysfunctions, which includes things like prolapse. So living with it, I guess the simplest answer is that you're setting yourself up for potential injuries in the future. And I have seen them, I've treated them. So women who have experienced certain symptoms from the time they had babies, which might be minor lower back pain or leaking with certain activities. And I literally come into the clinic 30 years later and they're like, I've had this since I had my babies, but now it's worse, or I've developed a prolapse, or I have to have surgery because I have really bad back pain. So I'm not trying to scare people. It's more just there's very good reason to correct this and correct it sooner rather than later, where your body is in its optimal place for healing and recovery and retraining like this. And then aesthetic reasons to fix it are things like a bulging belly, a mommy pooch, constantly feeling like a person looks bloated, or even just having poor posture that you don't like the look of it. Or maybe your pants aren't fitting you because your belly is bulging out.
Yeah, there's like all those aesthetic things, but like then again, functionally. And then now the one thing that I wanted to ask too is, because like obviously the first step is, okay, let me see what I can do at home. What type of exercises can I implement in my routine to help me like close this gap? The second is, okay, that routine is not working, or my diastasis is too severe. Maybe I'm in a, what you grade two or medium? What was the level again?
Moderate.
There moderate, was. Yeah. Size medium. Maybe it's, so you have a moderate and it's okay, I'm going to go see someone like Katie. I need to see a pelvic floor specialist and then I'm going to work with them. What is the, like, at what point are you like, you know what? I have tried everything. Maybe there's a surgical intervention that can take place.
Almost always people get to that point when the final goal is aesthetic. So it is so incredibly rare. I would say I probably see it most often in multiples and really either very large twins or more than twins. It's very rare for the muscles to be stretched out to the point they are not going to work anymore. So in the clinic, the testing that I'm looking for is how well are the abs and the pelvic floor naturally working and engaging, and what is their strength like? And my goal is to get a person's strength to the point where they can exercise, and most often it's moderate intensity exercise, both in strength training and cardiovascular training, that they are symptom free. So most often, if a person gets to a point where they're like, okay, I'm still seeking surgical intervention, it's because they don't like the way it looks.
Right.
Where I've concluded, like, you're strong, you're exercising, where you don't need to continue on with this treatment, but I understand you're still having this, you're unhappy with the way that it's looking, then surgery is an option. But right. It's very rare for it to be due to functional reasons.
I wonder if that's why that surgical procedure is never covered by insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's literally never covered by insurance.
Yeah.
So even if it was functional, I guess it wouldn't matter. But yeah.
No, I don't. I'm sure there are people who've had doctors go to bat for them who they're like, literally they have debilitating back pain and they need surgery. Like, I do believe that exists out there and insurance might cover it at that point, but it's, they're not going to cover it for aesthetic reasons.
Yeah. 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 Shame in that game though.
Yeah. No, I agree. I know it's whatever's going to make you feel good.
Exactly. Okay, good. I'm so glad that we covered this topic because it is a very popular one. We get lots of questions and I love the pelvic floor PT perspective. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. And thank you for having me. I'm happy to discuss this anytime.
Okay, that's all for today. If you liked today's episode, please share it with a mama friend and leave us a review. If you're pregnant, postpartum, or trying to conceive, you can download the Juna app completely free for 7 days. The app is available for iOS and Android and is designed to be your guide for all things health and fitness for this very special time of your life. If you have any suggestions for episodes you would like to hear or anyone you think would be a great guest on the show, please email me directly at sarah@juna.co. Thank you so much for listening and I'll see you next week.